State and local taxes can slow a business down. Your approach to tax shouldn't be left to chance. For practical answers that make business sense wherever you operate, you've got the Saltivation team at TaxOps. We handle tax with your goals in mind, so you can stay focused on growth. Ready for a smarter salt strategy? For an introductory call, reach out at taxops.com/contact. That's taxops.com/contact.
Welcome to Saltivation. The Saltivation Show is a podcast series featuring the leading voices in salt, where we talk about the issues and strategies to help you make sense of state and local tax.
In part two of our conversation with Brent Reeves, co-founder of SariTax, we get deep into the weeds of what makes modern sales tax automation effective. From API-driven architecture to the real-world consequences of faulty integrations, Brent walks us through how SariTax is solving the problems businesses didn't even know they had. We also explore audit readiness, legacy system pitfalls, and why sometimes doing it right the first time saves more than just money. Whether you're tech-savvy or tax-curious, this one's packed with insight.
So I want to take a step back because we've been kind of throwing out some terms of like connectors and API focuses and what that all means. And kind of the way, you know, Brent, you've expressed SariTax, it's like you're flexible, you're nimble and can adapt. But when we're talking about connectors and we're talking about APIs, what does that mean from like a sales tax perspective for maybe some of our listeners who either don't live in this space, maybe they're an income tax person, but like, what does that mean when you're thinking about sales tax?
Well, I mean, you know, connector API, you know, what I mean, sometimes the terms are kind of used, you know, ubiquitous, you know, they're kind of the same, but I think of connectors more as like fixed points. You know, where it's like, all right, I've built, you know, kind of a one line of communication, right, into this platform. And it's like, it's there. And you just, you know, if I'm the customer, okay, I've got a connector to this system that sits over here. I just turn it on and it's supposed to work, right? And then, but then I have another system that doesn't flow through this system. So what do I do over here, right? And so that's where if you think about it, the way I kind of think about it anyway, is like connectors are kind of more like one-to-one, whereas API is kind of like connect it all, right? So that's kind of the way I think about it. And even the connectors, like the early connectors are kind of built, and like I said, oh, it's over here and it's just supposed to work. It's like, okay, but what if? Like, what if, yeah, it works for like 80% of what I'm doing, but for 20%, it doesn't. Well, the connector itself, you know, may not be built to say, okay, well, let's just adapt it. Let's just modify it, right? Let's just change it. So when I think about it that way, I think like, you know, just being API driven on everything else is just sort of adds a layer of kind of connectivity across your entire base, but also your, you know, into your custom workflows and into your, you know, your in-house, you know, homegrown solutions, you know, things of that nature. So it's like, I want to be able to support you with everything you've got. A custom website that you built in-house, custom shopping cart, you know, so that's kind of the way I look at it.
Well, and so, and again, right, if you're thinking about it from like a layman's perspective, like your API kind of to you means like that flexibility and that all-encompassing, we can talk to you over here and over here, versus just like a canned, you're going to plug it in and that's it. And then if you have something else, you're going to plug in something else. So maybe we got 80% on one system, but then we're going to plug it in over here. We've got 18% over here. But we still have this 2% delta. But when you're kind of thinking from an API perspective, it's like circular and you can cover that 100% of everything that you're doing.
Yeah. And it's kind of owning the technology too, of that communication, right? So that, you know, for a number of reasons, it's also the back end, right? So I'm communicating with all these systems. I'm owning the technology that's connecting to whatever it is. So number one, I'm kind of owning the workflow that happens. So if I need to customize that workflow somehow, I can do that, you know, in-house. Secondarily, it's like, okay, also, yes, you want as many things as you can to live in an ERP. But you also have to have that kind of back-end reporting, because sometimes the reporting you can pull out of an ERP isn't complete. It isn't, it doesn't give, like Judy, for instance, what she needs in order to be compliant, right? And it also doesn't give the business visibility into what happened in order to be audit proof, right? So that was also actually going back to one of your earlier questions. That was another kind of thing. It was like, okay, what were the big problems we saw when people got audited? And it was like, I didn't have any visibility to my data. And it took me forever to just like get simple reports to go, this is, and, you know, this is what we did. And then the auditor usually doesn't stop it. Like, this is what you did. It's usually like, well, why did you do that? Right. So having the visibility into why was just as important. Right. So that was one of the things we always saw, you know, even in our previous, you know, company, which we were proud of, thought it was, you know, best product in market at the time. It was like, okay, well, if you had to dig into it, we didn't really know why. And even just like investigating things like overrides, exemptions, rules, right? So maybe you're like, okay, this is taxable in this way, but I need to make a rule that every time I see this customer number and this product number in this location, I need to citus it to this particular spot because there's a reason for it, right? There's a reason like, okay, I sold it to customer A whose headquarters is in, you know, Wichita, but the guy who's using it is in New York, right? So I need to make a rule that every time I see this transaction that I'm sourcing some of it to this user over here. So just things like that. But then visibility into the rules, because what happens, what we see a lot, and what we used to see all the time, especially when they're converting products, right? It's like, okay, well, you're getting this result. We're getting this result. Why? And they're like, we don't know. We did an override. Well, who did the override? We don't know. Well, why'd they do the override? We don't know. Because that person quit. Right. 2 years ago, they have no idea what Jane in 2004 did or why she did.
Yeah.
They just hard coded the change or they did. Oh, we have an override module. OK, great. We override it. You got to know like who override it, when they override it, why they override it. What was the difference? What was the outcome? Like, because if you do get audited, you don't just go, I don't know, Jane did it in 2002. You got to go, well, Jane did it because our taxability changed because we added this product line or we added shipping or we included this, you know, things like that. So that was one of the things, again, it's just like, you know, creating that transparency. And like, again, that goes where the APIs also come into as opposed to like the connector. Connector basically enables tax inside the ERP, if you think about it that way, right? Which is great. Okay. Don't get me wrong. It's great. But, you know, again, owning more of that communication than being able to interact all over the place, you know, via like more of a, you know, an API, it allows us to be able to, you know, also house all that data. So if you do have limitations in your ERP as far as what you can get out, I've got it, right? So when Judy calls me and says, I'm representing somebody in an audit, I need to know why this happened. I need to know what happened in New York City, and I need to know why. I not only give her what happened in New York City, but why. And, you know, I can even run, you know, what if scenarios and go, well, if you'd have done it this way, you'd have come up with this,
yep.
Right? Even just like taxability, yeah. Right? That was another thing. So again, going back to the module thing, it's like, you know, you might get a tax back and you go, why'd you get this tax? Well, because it's SaaS. Okay, great. And then they go, well, you know, but a lot of people are like, well, we don't think that's applicable. Why is that applicable? Well, there's no exposure, right? So you'd either have to buy another module, right? Or buy a tool. There was a company out there called, right, that had a, you know, had a tool, and all it basically did was just look up taxability. Or you submit a support ticket and wait for like weeks as far as saying like, why did you apply SaaS to this particular module when it's downloadable software, making something up, right? But so even that, so we're like, we wanted to expose the taxability also and say, okay, we used, you know, here's the definition that we used for your product. Does that match? And then here are the statute and regs we use. It says in, you know, Colorado, this, you know, this applies.
That expertise between the choice and the application is super important. And then, you know, it's interesting about sales tax software. I don't think they tell you this, but by default, it's taxable. If you have Nexus and you don't map a product to a category, it's going to default to taxable.
Right.
We've had clients override the taxability. Why? They don't even know. Yeah. So we have a Pennsylvania audit issue of $500,000 for a client that didn't collect the tax, didn't even think about it. Now we're fighting it when it's questionably taxable. It isn't 100% right or wrong, but it's like, is that the way you want to do business, to have to fight? Just tax it or think about it. But what they did is they just took it away. So this interesting, they didn't even understand what that meant.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? They didn't understand when they added a new product code what they should do with it. So they just overwrote it. And then they got in trouble later. So that's not fun, because whoever overwrote it's no longer with the company.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just that sort of stuff.
Is and we see that. We see that in every size company, right? I mean, that's the thing. This is not exclusive. I mean, there are really large companies have massive tax teams, and they're probably the worst, honestly, because you know there's so many people in there, and there's so many kind of cooks in the kitchen, if you will. That if there's no traceability onto, again, why somebody did something, it's an issue. And that goes back to the other part, right, about multiple disjointed systems. It's like, because you might make a change in this system, but this division over here didn't make that same change. Mm-mm.
It's not an institutional awareness. Not a lot of tax. I can remember it going out, and we'd get at the table and IT's making a change. We're like, wait a minute, what are you going to do about tax? And we get involved to advocate for that, because IT's just like, I just want to connect it. I need to pull all this historical data into this new system and make it all work. And it's like, but you need to make sure you can take that next step too, because those are the duties you have. And the IT's like, they're like, I got historical, I got new, and then I can't deal with any of that other stuff in the middle. And I'm like, it's funny, because they're smart tech people. They understand data,
absolutely.
But if you don't insert yourself in that process as a tax or finance or accounting person and speak that language, you miss the boat.
Well, and it's not even tech people who are making those decisions. Like, we find often that it's sales. It's sales people where they're like, I'm going to get this sale. I'm going to, you need 20 more users. No problem. Here's the same code. I'm going to add 20. It's a different SKU and it's not mapped. Because what does sales want to do, right? Companies don't exist without sales. Right. But they are constantly adding things without this kind of the next step of what that means.
We have a client that, they put everything under a parent, have a bunch of Shopify entities, and everything's registered at the parent. But there's no way to remit or collect tax at the parent. And it's not even an operating entity. Like, people don't understand how to get licensed. They don't understand how to integrate things. What is legally a structure? Is it actually sales tax a structure? Let's pull together a bunch of different businesses with different systems and then throw it all together and call it a brand. But there's a physical FEIN related or a legal entity with each one. I mean, people don't always think, like, you can't just roll things up for business purposes and go to market and not consider the operational issues and the legal issues. And there's a huge disconnect between those within tech and legal and private equity, buying up different brands to assimilate to a concept and having all those entities. And that's also the problem with large multinational companies. They acquire.
People, absolutely.
Content, clients, and they don't integrate into the system. And I always laugh, because we would have all this, a lot of, we worked with BlackRock and all kind of the big PE at Deloitte, and they were always on it. Like, they made sure they got sales tax compliance, state tax compliance. So I love that, because they understood that and they valued it, because they knew there was legacy issues. So they always get everything cleaned up. But it's such work on the people who are still there to operationally manage all the different systems, because they don't talk to each other.
Well, so. All these companies, right? IT is usually so overburdened with everything. So, that goes. So, and the tax team is, not to be, hopefully this is not offensive to everybody out there, but, they're always kind of like the redheaded stepchild in the back office or something, that they just don't get the attention that they deserve. Because everybody's always playing offense, right? And they're not really thinking about defense. And it's like, I can add all this revenue if I use my IT team to build this functionality. And then that IT team is not available for the tax team when the tax team is saying, hey, I got to connect 5 new systems over here just to remit tax. I got to have IT resources. Yeah. So that was one of the things too, is like, how do we make it so IT light so that, I don't have to have, Liz in the back office fighting, the sales team who wants to build some kind of cool new feature because they got a customer for it. And then she doesn't know how to, how do I get the sales tax data? How do I report on that? Because she's not getting IT to help. She's just not. I mean, so.
No.
So we're like, that was part of that. It's like, how do I make this so IT light that, we can actually enable them and allow them to kind of fight for the resources they need. But, you know, one of the things that you were saying earlier kind of made me think back to the very first question was like, okay, well, you know, what's kind of what's different? Like, you know, when you built the software, what were you kind of considering, or what did that team look like? And we're talking about, you know, yeah, technology people, but they have to have the tax background, they have tax knowledge to understand it. It's like, how many times, Judy, do you deal with companies where it's like the IT team comes in to talk about it, they don't understand tax at all, and like you're trying to get them to understand what it is you're trying to accomplish, and they're like, you know, we'll do this and we'll do that, and they're like, no, you don't understand. Like, that's, so it's like, those are the people, you know, I can't hire them to build my technology, you know, my tax technology. I got to hire the IT guys. Like, yeah, I know exactly what this is because I've had to do this for my tax team before. So that was when when we were hiring, we're like, yeah, obviously you want first class developers, but if we can find the leadership team, especially that has that kind of, you know, tax background, then when you build the foundation of the product, it's always going to be built on the foundation of tax.
Oh, I mean, the internet has proliferated growth and new ways of doing business and new ways to connect to one another and to build your market bigger than your backyard. It's fantastic.
Sure.
Anyway.
Well, I think that's the perfect transition to kind of, as we wrap up, we always kind of like to end with a, well, what's next, right? So looking ahead, how do you envision the future of sales tax automation evolving? And do you see any trends or innovations that, like, we should be watching for in the next year, other than maybe Ceratax goes public and they're huge and you never have to do this again?
Yeah. I'm going to play, I guess, the contrarian role a little bit here. And because most of the time people say, you know, what's next? And you're always like AI and all these other kind of, yeah. And yeah, I mean, obviously that's happening. And even like within our space, obviously, you know, we're going to be using AI to make things more efficient. But I really see a trend in moving away from the fully automated solutions and more into the services solutions, especially in the compliance space, because as companies are entering in and they are getting to a certain size and they've tried the push a button and everything's automated for you, only to realize that, okay, well, no, there's actually some art to this. And also it's like, especially in kind of when you're tipping from the small to the mid-market is where I really start to see that. I see going to that because they're like, okay, well, what's a notice? Why aren't my notices being filed? And like the fully automated solution is like, okay, I think it's working. I mean, I pushed a button and it said it filed the sales tax, but like, I'm now getting, you know, requests from the Secretary of State. I don't really understand this, or Department of Revenue. There's just a comfort level. And I honestly think I see more people moving back to, yes, you're going to automate parts, right? You're going to automate our side, obviously. I mean, the tax calc has to be automated. And, you know, exemption certificate management, if you can automate that as best as you can, absolutely. You know, that those are kind of table stakes automations that these companies are going to move into. But I really see a trend in those companies going, no, I really want someone like, you know, that I know is going to answer the phone call because I don't really understand this. And I want this comfort level that it's actually being done right and that I can get that support level. So we're seeing more like it's in the compliance space and the filing space and the consulting space and things like that. We see more trend towards like what I would call technology enabled services. So it's more around like Judy, you know, and your firm actually being there, you know, and people are like, you know, as opposed to, you know, the automated end to end, it's like automate up to here. But at this point, I got to have someone I can rely on. I see that as a trend on the sales tax automation side. The trend we see and what we're really trying to enable is how easily can I make it to where someone can convert one system to another system, whether it's one of my competitors to me, or whether it's, hey, how easily can I take three systems and change it all and connect it? So I think that's where the innovation and the invention is coming, is where like, okay, what is that tool that it doesn't take 2.5 years to convert, you know, tax engines, because I'm not getting what I want, but it's just too cumbersome. It's just too cumbersome to make the switch. So, you know, what has to happen in order to trigger that event? And then what's the solution to make that easier? For two reasons. Number one, it's like to get what you want, right? So new technology, but it's also so you're not held ransom for just increases upon increases upon increases, right? Because if you don't have that option to move quickly.
Right. Not finding comfort and complacency.
I just got my renewal and it's a 40% increase. What? And you go, I only got 60 days before my renewal. What am I going to do now? Right. I have to sign up. I have to renew.
Yep.
Right. So I think, and it's something we're investing in and heavily, is like, how do you make that to where you're not beholden to that anymore? You can go, okay, my business didn't increase 40%. Why is your fee increasing 40%? Mm-hmm. By the way, I'm going to switch.
Correct.
And they can't go, then at the very least, you got negotiating power, right? Huge enterprises, they're still spending millions of dollars for solutions that are out of date. And it's mainly because they're hostage. So I think that's going to be a big trend. And obviously the big trends are always, vertical markets that change.
What do you mean by that?
Well, like you and I were joking about it before the call, right? About like Blockbuster, right? Like, okay, we put all this research into, the taxability of rental DVDs or whatever the case may be.
Yep.
No one saw streaming coming, right?
No,
so,
for sure.
So that's what I'm saying, like vertical markets changing, right? I mean, the communication, even software as a service is a big one we see, especially because like a lot of the software as a service are things that enable like call centers and things that enable like customer service. Like, hey, we're providing the software. It measures how much time Susie's on the phone with somebody and how satisfied they are. And we're tracking speech patterns. We're using AI to say, hey, every time these people call in, these are the problems, all those sorts of things. Well, quickly that software has become a communications product. And communication taxes are a whole nother animal. So it's like, so we're seeing verticals change a lot, right? So, and then as a vertical changes, it changes taxability of the products that you used to sell because you're delivering them in a new way. So, just things like that. I always go, especially people in our industry, we kind of balance back and forth between how much do we say, because we don't want to scare everybody out of their shoes, right? Like I was just doing a seminar actually down at IT Expo last week, and we're going on and on about like a lot of the new fees and taxes and things like that are applicable in these industries, and I'm like going, okay, everybody in this room right now is sweating, and I'm like, look, it's huge, right? It's like even like gross receipts taxes and just things like that and the government's just going to constantly find ways to find new avenues of revenue, especially as like they adjust the income tax if they try to bring the income tax,
right, because the states based on the federal, every entitlement the federal goes down to the states 100%.
Yeah, but we go back and forth between like telling everybody, hey, like this is real, this is what you have to deal with, and scaring the heck out of them, but then at the same time going, well, yeah, but that's why we're in business, because like. You don't have to do it. Like, you don't need to stay up at night sweating about it. You need to like just know who to call, and then just interview them all and make sure you're comfortable with like who you're talking to. Especially like on larger enterprise deals, we always say like, hey, our best sales pitch is like stump the chump. Like, start asking those kind of really kind of detailed questions and then just see, who you're talking to, who answers them the best, honestly. And we kind of love those engagements. So, yeah. So, kind of going back and forth between, it's just, expressing the complexity and the severity of it, but also, not scaring the heck out of people. Because, that's what we're here.
Well, and I think that's the perfect place to kind of end it. And, Brent, so we thank you so much for kind of being a little bit of a market disruptor and, giving our clients another option that's going to be flexible and nimble for them. So thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, of course.
And spending your afternoon with us on the Saltivation podcast. We really appreciate it.
Awesome. It was fun.
All right. And that's another episode of Saltivation. Till next time.
This podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended, nor should it be relied upon as legal, tax, accounting, or investment advice. You should consult with a competent professional to discuss specifics of your situation and the applicability of the information presented.
State and local taxes can slow business down. Your approach to tax shouldn't be left to chance. For practical answers that make business sense wherever you operate, you've got the Saltivation team at TaxOps. We handle tax with your goals in mind, so you can stay focused on growth. Ready for a smarter salt strategy? For an introductory call, reach out at taxops.com/contact. That's taxops.com/contact.